podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good evening and welcome to the Fatback 4-4 this Sunday night. I'm Gavin, with me I have Grace, Keith and Shawnee. And on tonight's show we're going to look back at Liverpool 1, Chelsea 1. We're going to look at the lineup, which may have been a bit of a surprise to some. And we're going to look at the red card in the game, which was a fair, was it not? There's been a lot of debate over that. And of course we're going to look at the window closing as well on Tuesday at 11 p.m. Loads more in between as well. Where we start? We'll start on the lineup. Shawnee, I'm going to come to you first. The lineup, which I can put up on screen for you. I had to surprise you, Shawnee. No, like I know there was rumored lineups and stuff like that, but that surprised me when it came out. I'm being honest.
Yeah, the only one I was surprised with really was the inclusion of Elliot. I didn't think that Klopp would put him in there and such a big high stakes game, because yesterday was a game of big boy football, you know what I mean? It's two of the best teams in Europe playing against each other, and in these type of games, as we saw yesterday and how it played out, the finer margins and the little details in these games can be the difference between getting a draw, being beaten, or winning the game. So I was surprised that he went with Elliot. I thought it would have been more of a tried and trusted, probably Keita in there because he had played well in the last two games, or Thiago even, as he was kind of building him up, because I know Thiago played 90 minutes against Aston Villa in the behind closed doors game, and he comes on then towards the end of the Burnley game. So I was thinking maybe he was looking at having a midfield three of Thiago, Fabinho and Henderson on that right-hand side, which has been sort of the go-to midfield in the bigger games. Elliot starts, and to be fair, it's a start on merit because he was absolutely superb against Burnley. And I don't think he let himself down, to be honest. I think he played very well. I think he had a good game. I think he handled the situation in the game very well. And again, I just have to say, I'm absolutely blown away by the kid, not by his football, but the maturity he spoke with in his interview after the game. It's like this kid is coming on leaps and bounds every time we see him, because, you know, he was getting into a little bit of stuff on social media and the stupid haircuts. He was a kid, you know what I mean? Mm. He seems to be growing really rapidly, as not only as a footballer, but as a man. So, yeah, he comes in, he doesn't do himself any really. I think he probably upsets the balance on the left-hand side of the team, because I don't think Henderson had his best game. I don't think Robbo was very good here, and I don't think Mane was great. As opposed to the other side, I think the right-hand side functions really, really well with Harvey Elliott in there. He seems to have a really good understanding of Mo Salah already, which has become apparent over the last two games. So Bobby was always going to come in for the big game. I think Klopp fancies Bobby in the big games. The ball retention is pressing, and he done that really well in the first half. He was everywhere at times. So I wasn't surprised to see Jota come out. Not because Jota hasn't been great. I just feel that in those big games, I think Bobby is the one that Klopp really trusts.
Chris, Elliot starts, and it is a surprise for me, although he's been really good when he's played, you know, with a small sample size, let's be honest. But I think, and someone said in the chat there, the surprise was that they moved Henderson, you know, and they put Henderson out to the left-hand side. And that's why it was a bit strange to me, because I think Keita has done really well in that position. And to move Keita out, to take Keita out for Henderson, I couldn't understand why he just didn't put Henderson on the right-hand side and let Elliot play off the left-hand side. It seemed to affect both sides of our midfield, you know, the sort of way. And the Firmino one, for me, I didn't expect him to start, because I thought they were managing him and, you know, bring him back. And I know where Shawnee's coming from. Like, you fancy him in the big games, but I was very shocked that Jota didn't start.
Yeah, I was shocked. Jota didn't start. I was shocked Elliot started. But Jurgen Klopp is when he puts a faith in a play, when he puts faith in a player, he really puts faith in a player. Doesn't matter what level of game it is. And as Shawnee says, this was a big boy game. And Elliot, we spoke about it last week. He was playing against, like, physically, he was playing up against big boys last week. This week, he was playing big boys in terms of levels as well. And he didn't look out of place, in my opinion. I think the thinking behind Henderson and Fabinho, yeah, he kind of shoehorned Henderson in because he had to bring in Fabinho because he felt Fabinho's aerial presence or protecting the back, the two centre-backs, sort of, they created a shield in front of Lukaku. I think that probably was the tactical thinking behind it. And Henderson, 6-foot-plus as well. Fucking saying that, they scored from a set piece in the end, but the thinking, that was the thought process, I'd say. But Fabinho looked very sluggish, and Henderson didn't look comfortable playing on that left. Obviously, the highlight of his uncomfortableness was when he was found in the box in the first 20 minutes or something, was it?
Yeah.
When he had a good chance. So, yeah, overall, even Robertson, bringing back Robertson, obviously, you bring back Robertson if he's fully 100% fit. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. But even Robertson wasn't himself. So, yeah, that left side kind of totally killed us. I think that was the disappointing thing for me anyway.
Yeah, I just, like, it's not hindsight for me. I did look at the side and I just thought it looked a bit unbalanced to start with. I understand getting certain players on the pitch. I can understand the Firmino one because he'll come and he'll sit on Jorginho, for argument's sake. Yeah. You know what I mean? You understand an Elliot because of the way he's played. I don't understand the Keita one. You know, I just don't. For me, it's just a weird one. But Keith, when you see in the lineup, did you think that, or did you think, no, it's a good lineup, that there's people there in America? Because I did. I felt sorry for Jota and I felt sorry for Keita, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I suppose it's hard to look without using hindsight now. But when I seen the team, I always thought Bobby was coming back into that team for the reason that, and we've said it all through last year, the year before, Bobby comes in, Klopp trusts him in these big games, and especially against the likes of Chelsea, where Jorginho dictates that play. And you need someone to sit. And Bobby is the one who will do that. You know, he is the forward that will do that and will get in amongst them. So I wasn't really shocked. What I was shocked was Robbo starting. I wouldn't have started him. That wasn't hindsight. That was, I might have said that on the midweek fix last week. I wouldn't have brought him back in because you can't be fit after getting an injury that reeled you out that long. And he didn't look fit. I thought the left-hand side, I didn't think Robertson looked fit. I think Henderson was drifting in centrally too much. Naturally, I think he just sort of drifts. And I thought Sadio was a bit woeful. So yeah, the left side, I wouldn't have started. I'd have kept Tsimikas in there just because I think he played well and he was warranting a game. Now, if he wanted to bring Henderson in, I wouldn't have, of all the positions, I wouldn't have put him as the left-hand side for the fact that he's just going to constantly move in and move in, which is what he's done. Keita plays there, Thiago plays there. I would have played one of those players there that are used to that, that gives you that balance. And people will listen to this and they'll say, what's the difference? You're a central midfield player. What's the difference if you're playing on the left-hand side of a midfield three or a right-hand side? It's a huge difference because if you look at the way Henderson plays, Gav, you said this for the last 2 years, when Henderson does all the donkey work for Salah, he allows Trent to go forward and he does all that by slotting in and covering on that side. So I think his natural inclination is to move into his right all the time. And I think it just exposed us. But look, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, I was excited to see Elliot in there. I wouldn't have been surprised if Elliot had been dropped out, just because we said it last week as well. You know, you play him against Burnley, you give him that taste, you give him the 90 minutes, he wasn't whipped off. And then you sit him out with this one. And you say, there's other games coming up for you. Don't worry, we'll get you in. To play him again in this, I thought was a great great show of support by Jurgen Klopp for Harvey Elliott. I think it's put a few lads on their toes now. I think there's players in that squad that might have expected to come in. I think we all would have thought in this midfield would have been Fabinho, Henderson, and either Thiago or Keita. I didn't think it would have been Harvey Elliott, but look, he's thrown a spanner in there, and I thought Elliott done very well. Sean, you said he links up really well with Mo Salah and Trent on that right-hand side. I think he's getting used to playing a new position, Harvey Elliott, because what I found was the problem sort of with him there, Mo Salah is not a wide player. Mo Salah is cutting in all the time. And I think Harvey was maybe getting into some positions similar to Mo Salah. So I think he just needs to maybe learn a slight adjustment to where he's going, because I thought they were sort of occupying similar positions yesterday. I don't think there was enough width. We don't get width out of Mo Salah. We don't get width out of Jordan Henderson. I'm not saying Henderson would have been over there giving us that width threat. I just felt that there was maybe on each other's toes a bit, but Elliott will learn from that. That's it. You know, they're the European champions. That's not a bad game to get your feet under the table in this team. And so, look, I thought Elliott done well. Hindsight is a wonderful thing, but I genuinely would have started Tsimikas ahead of Robertson, because I just didn't think Robertson would be fit, and it looked it in the game.
Super chat here from Govender. I'm going to just call you because there's loads of letters and numbers. He said Elliott was absolutely class and has made Trent tuck inside loads more. That looks like it's being worked out on the training ground. Yeah, and there's probably a point there when you think, why is he shifting Henderson? But if he's going to play Elliott, why move Elliott to the left when he's done all his work in pre-season and stuff on that right side of a tree? So it was one of those. But I'm sure there's loads of people in the chat were bang happy that he started. I was with you though. I thought Fabinho would come in simply because of that. Like Grizz said, the protection for the centre halves after all the media stuff around Lukaku for the last week or so. And I just thought Jota, in a game where I understand the Firmino thing, but we spoke about Jota last week. He doesn't get overly involved. Works hard, pressing machine. Doesn't get overly involved, but he's always there. Bang, you know, goal, shot on target. And I think that's something we badly missed yesterday. Although Firmino, up until probably 5 minutes before he went off, done okay. But I just thought in a game of fine margins, and you want someone a little bit clinical, I thought maybe Jota was the shout. But look, he went with Firmino, and we all know how it worked out and stuff like that. Going through the game, you know, I didn't think it was a great game. I'm going to be honest. I thought there was a lot of controversy in it. I thought it was the pace was quite good in it. I thought the quality wasn't quite there throughout the game, but you know, Liverpool are well on top for me, and then Chelsea score. Liverpool had 4 shots, I think, before Chelsea scored. None of them on target, mind you, but they were probing, I thought, Liverpool, and I thought something will come eventually. But Havertz gets the first goal, and Sean, I'll come back to you. A lot of people saying, did he mean it, did he not? But he just does the right thing, doesn't he? He makes a good run. He's not tracked. The defending is poor, you have to say. Who has him? And even at that, the guys on the front post or around that area, why aren't they watching for something like this? But he does the right thing, Sean. He gets a flick on it, which if it doesn't go in, it causes trouble for Liverpool. But exactly, it manages to loop over Alisson and go into the net. And it's a good header, whether he means it or not. It's actually a good header for what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I thought the lead up to the corner, I thought it was a bit, I don't know, it just seemed a bit lazy and casual to me. I think don't think Trent gets close enough to Alonso quite quick enough. And I know there's a bit of everyone, Neville is thinking, oh, did it go out off Trent? And it does. It was a corner, but I just don't think we weren't snappy enough to stop the cross. Now, he does stop. He obviously gets a block on the cross, but it goes out for a corner, so it's not ideal. It's a lovely run from Havertz. He catches Robbo, because Robbo's the one, I think he was marking him. And like you said, it's just one of them, Gav, where you get a touch on it, and he's looking to flick it towards the back post and cause a disruption, but he happens to just head it so clean that it just loops in, and it's a good goal. You know what I mean? It's soft in the way the corner's conceded. It's a good goal. There's not an awful lot you can do about that instead of read a better. But I just think Robbo's on his toes a little bit, on his heels, and Havertz steals a match, and that's the type of player that Havertz is. Havertz plays the game with the extra couple of yards in his head, and it just showed he's a player who's going to really grow into himself this season, I feel. And it was one of them. This game is always going to be won on a set piece or a mistake or a such moment of genius. That's the way these games are normally, you know what I mean? It's not normally just 2-1 throw, a slobber knocker. Not at this stage of the season, because I think at the stage of the season we were, both coaches were probably thinking, okay, well, if you don't get B here, well, we're in a good position. So it's probably important you don't lose, especially for Chelsea. Don't lose away from home on the road in the big leagues, because I think the way this season is panning out, the whoever ends up on top of the mini league, so to speak, will win the league.
Yeah, because you can see an awful lot of these teams, you know, flat track bullying, as they call it, and then it comes down to that mini league. And it sounds like a very obvious thing to say, but we've seen teams in the past where they don't quite perform that great in the mini league of that six or seven or whatever it is, but they could still go and win a league because they just flat track bully better than others. Kyle Fagan says, and a couple of kind of mentioned this, and Grizz, I'll come to you. He reckons it was poor from Alisson not to get that. And someone else, I think it was, it might have been Sean Swain, if I got your name wrong. No, I didn't. Sean Swain. He reckons that his footwork was slow on that. Do you agree, Grizz? He's muted.
I was muted.
Yep.
It's a difficult one to blame the keeper. You know, it did, to us, it seemed a bit loopy. It kind of took ages to get into there, but. As a goalkeeper, no, I'm not an expert in goalkeeper, but when you hear commentators speak about goalkeeper situations or positioning on a corner, you try to, especially if you haven't got anyone on the far post or near post, you try to more cover the near post. It was a, look, I think whether he meant it or not, again, it's not the main issue. The main issue was our slackness and poorness in defending and organising. We're not normally like that. Those days of conceding soft goals from set pieces were a thing of the past, and that was as easy because they only had three people in the area, and we had like sort of four in a zone and then two, three loitering around. And Havertz, like Werner's pretty short. Havertz is 6 foot plus, so to leave just a 6 foot plus striker in effect just around. Was awful. So yeah, I wouldn't blame Alisson, to be honest with you. I just blame the whole group of them, the organisation around it.
I'm wondering how hard it is to stop anyway, if he's tracked, because he's not stretching for it. You know, he's not absolutely stretching to get a flick on it. It's just a flat ball that he gets a good header on, and he's not like 15 yards out. You know, it happens very, very quickly. And you would, some goalkeepers or some people that like, you know, no goalkeepers better than us would say, no, we should probably move his feet a bit quicker and get across. But I think because of the angle it's at and how quick it happens, I think it's one of those where it's over him before he even, I know he dives, but I think it's over him and it's in it. And somebody says there, it scrapes the crossbar on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's a foot or 18 inches below the crossbar and you're kind of going, move your feet and you get that. I think it's one of those. It's when you're tough when you're a kid, when you play football. Get to the front post and just get a flick on it and you never know what will happen. It could drop at the back post or it can go in. It's one of those, and it's very simple.
You don't see them much anymore at all.
No, because...
the near post flick on.
Yeah, but it's something you're told as a kid. You know, I remember as a kid, like, get to the
front post. Arsenal used to do it, didn't
they? Get to the front post and just get ahead on it and see where it goes, you know. And it's a bit like air goal, or not air goal, but the lead up to where a penalty, when you look at Mane, just gets a flick into an area and, you know, that's the way it goes. But Keith, I'll come to you because I don't think Liverpool reacted very well to that goal. You know, I was expecting Liverpool to go, right, it's happened, let's get back on it. But I thought we looked a bit ropey. You know, Lukaku turns Matip very, very easily. I think it's Matip and he plays in Mount. And I think Mount probably makes the wrong decision. And at that stage, I'm thinking, these could get a second here. And then it's really up here. Liverpool needed to kind of settle things down, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. The momentum of games can go like that. You know, you get a goal really out of the blue. A lot of people, just to go back to the Havertz goal, a lot of people saying it was a fluke, he didn't mean it, but look, he's a good header of the ball, Kai Havertz. He's about 6'2", like, he's good in the air. Sean, he said he connected nice on it, so I think, you know, that got their tails up, and then they were driving, and look, any team, I think, so just after scoring, sometimes you can silence a crowd, and you can sniff blood in the water, you know. So I think, you know, Chelsea looked like they could have done it, but then I thought Liverpool did weather it well. I thought, you know, after Mount has his chance, I think Liverpool get more into it. But you know, it's hard because there's an expectation, right, that Liverpool, you know, the crowds are back and we're going to be going in and steamrolling every team at Anfield, and it's not going to happen. You know, the there's some good teams in this league now, some really, really good teams in this league. And Chelsea went in there, and for that period, I thought they looked the threat. I thought that threat died away then, obviously, what happens later on. But I thought Chelsea probably, if they had to put their foot a bit more on the throat, could have had a bit more joy in the 10 minutes after they scored, but they didn't. So I was happy enough with that. You know, I was happy. Liverpool did sort of start to get into it and then start to put them under a bit more pressure and start to take a hold of the game as the first half went on. Chelsea are a weird team, you know, in... To me, like, they don't really have a settled team. The next game they play, they could play Werner and Ziyech, and people would say, oh, that's just squad depth. You know, it's not, they're not, none of them are really standing out at the moment, but they do have players of a threat. I think Mason Mount's one of the best young players in England. I think he's absolutely excellent footballer. I think he's brilliant. I think he's so underrated as well. For an English player, it's unusual because they usually ramp them up to 90. I think that young fella is absolute quality. And, you know, I was worried about, you know, we spoke about the build-up to the game, the Lukaku versus Van Dijk carry-on that went on. And the threat wasn't Lukaku. It was the runners off Lukaku. Mm. And it was Mason Mount. And it was, in this instance, Kai Havertz. And you saw Chelsea starting to do that after the goal. You saw them starting to get these lads into these positions that looked like they might cause us problems. But then I thought Airboys got in and let Chelsea know that it wasn't going to be that easy, because I've been really impressed. I said that the left side, I thought, let us down. But we'll speak about some excellent performances later. And I'm going to talk about the centre-backs again, because... I think Joe Matip, he can look like he's going to get ragdolled, and then just grows into it, and then just absolutely upend centre forwards as well. So look, let's see. The game goes on. How many? What minute? It's 44, is it that?
Yeah,
that we get that channel.
It's on the stroke. Yeah. It's on the stroke at halftime, and I want to give a mention to Mason Mount, because I thought he was brilliant yesterday.
The whole idea
of him, and like he says, it sounds like he's just a runner off Lukaku and he's a sideshow, but he's actually very, very important to what they do. He holds onto the ball so well. He's strong. I think it was his second half.
Touching the first half where he rolled, I think it's Matip, was sensational.
It's
Zidane-esque.
And do you know what? What impressed me most was when they were down to 10, and we get on to that in a bit. When he was down to 10, he has the ball over the far side. And I think Thiago and maybe Mane go in and both give him a belt, and he comes out with the ball. You know, he's strong, and I think he's a fabulous player, Mason Mount. An absolutely fabulous player.
Getting onto what Keith said there about Chelsea, like, 1 week being able to play Havertz and Mount, that's the beauty of their squad, is that not only have they got like depth in personnel, but they can actually be very tactically adaptable, because they can play a 4-3-3 now next week. And have the likes of Hudson-Odoi and Ziyech playing up, whipping balls into the Lukaku. And then you have Havertz and Mount, who kind of operate those spaces in between the midfield and the forward line, that just where they cause havoc. So them going down to 10 men didn't really deter from their game plan, because they just said, look, we are talking about how brilliant Mount is. Tuchel just now, right, I'll just whip Havertz here, and throw on another fullback in there into that space, and I can just let Mount do the walk of two across both, and that's what he done. So that will explain why what happened in the second half as you're going on. But this is what we should be looking to do, Gav. That should be the blueprint. Now, I'm not saying spend loads of money like Chelsea, but that's having a real squad depth. You look at City. City have loads of players who just do the same thing. Do you know what I mean? They have loads of players who just do the same thing. So that would be the difference, I think, coming the end of this season.
Well, we will get on to that in a little bit with regards to the window and stuff. But I want to go on to the penalty incident then. It's right on half time, and Liverpool were building up a bit ahead of steam. You know, you could see Lukaku, you could see Chelsea were dropping back, and they were trying to hit Lukaku in the channels. And, you know, let him hold it and then look for those runners off him to try get them out even. Not to over attack us, but just get them out and, you know, get a breather. But, you know, just before the, I think it might be just before or after the goal, you see a ball down to Lukaku and Van Dijk just swats him away and turns and plays it back into Matip and Liverpool go on the attack. And you could see the crowd absolutely getting up for it. But Grace, I'll come to you on this incident because it's a good bit of play from Liverpool, forced a corner. It's whipped in, Mane gets a flick on it, goes across goal. When Matip hit it up in the air, I was like, that has to be going out. And then what Mendy is doing is beyond me because he's jumping with his own defender. And then Matip hits the bar when he should score. And then it drops down as madness. But it's a penalty. There's no doubt about that, Grizz. But where do you stand on the red card? Because there's been loads of people, Liverpool fans, saying, yeah, it's a red, and saying no. And the vast majority of Chelsea going, look, it's a penalty, but there's no way it's a red. Where do you stand on it?
So look, the reason why you say we got back ourselves into it. I think Jota comes on. How soon does Jota come on? I think it's about the 35th.
Yeah, no, he comes on around the 40th minute.
It's
around that, yeah. He's not on long and he goes on a run into the box.
43.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So literally as soon as Jota comes in, he changes the direction or the pace of the attack. So Jota, we know, obviously, maybe not as technically as gifted and sort of aware of spaces and other players around him as Bobby. But what he has is a directness that probably Mo Salah has. I've often said it, he's quite like Mo Salah in that terms of his dribbling style and whatnot. And he goes straight for the back three. He gets the ball, receives the ball, and he forces a corner. And from there, as you say, it's absolute chaos. Mane has a free header, which he probably should get on target. And then you think to yourself, is Matip going to tap that in? Because he's got such, you know, lanky legs, isn't he? You think he's going to reach in. But instead, he kind of just loops it back in the air. Alonso goes in with a challenge on Mendy. And then, as you say, Matip looking to head it in. But yeah, fair play to Mane. He gets there before Havertz. Obviously, having strikers and forwards in those positions is one of those things, isn't it? They're not going to think like a defender automatically, especially his face to the his back to the other way, where Mane's coming directly at the ball, gets a toe poke. Gav, the question I posed as well on Twitter as well, and I wasn't trying to sort of trigger the Chelsea fans or opposition fan bases, but when was the last time we saw someone handball on the line and not get a red card?
Exactly.
Keith, I couldn't remember. And no. People are saying, oh my God, I couldn't remember the last time someone on the goal line handballs it. And let's not, we'll get to the critical part of why he was sent off. And it was quite obvious and blatant, not even as a Liverpool fan, but any fan watching that. So they talk about the deflection going onto the hand, and this season it's supposed to be changed. You know, that's not a handball if it deflects off any part of your body.
Brings his hand at the ball.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sweet.
But at the end, so what happens was he plays, you guys ever played slap ball? We call it slap ball in London.
That's what it says on the tin outside, does it?
It's exactly that. Up against the wall and you slap the ball, and it's like you got to play the half volley. People know slap ball. Handball. If you do, give us a shout. You call it handball, we call it slap ball. But he plays slap ball. So he panics, ball hits his hand, and then obviously it wasn't enough. The pace of the ball was such that he couldn't have just stopped it by just leaving his hand there. It still would have gone over his hand. So what he does, he feels that pressure of the ball coming and it just kind of just flips it forward. And people criticizing the referee who was, even though he gave that red card, was still a prick. Let's not get away
from it. We're going to get on to him.
Oh, he was still a prick. So for me, it was an absolute dead cert handball and near enough a dead cert red card as well. For the fact
that I watched the new one. It's the real.
It is the real. And loads of people are saying, but the laws of the game, it is a red card, law 12. You can debate whether the law is harsh, but the law is the law.
Exactly.
And I watched it with a Chelsea fan yesterday. Me and a Chelsea fan sitting watching it. And when he seen it, he said, well, it's a definite penalty. But what do you think about the handball? I said, Do you know what? And I didn't know the rule because I don't read rules of football. You know what I mean? I looked at it objectively, right? I don't sit down with the book. But I looked at it and I said to him, look, if he's on the line and that hits him on the, he goes to hit it with his leg, you know, say he goes to knee it away and mistimes it and it comes up onto his arm. I think that's a penalty and I think it's a yellow card because I think he's made it. No, what I'm saying is if he makes an attempt to move towards that ball and hit it and it hits his arm, it's not intentional, but this is what I thought. I'm not saying I know what the law and the rule is, but my point about the whole thing was, if he makes an attempt to play that ball and it comes up and it hits him, it's unintentional, but it has stopped the goal, right? So, you know, the VAR will come in and all this come in, and I personally would have looked at it and went, do you know what? It's a yellow and it's a penalty.
But he can't.
Right, I know he can't. Yeah, and the referee obviously knew the rule, but me looking at it then said to myself, and people said, well, his movement with his hand didn't touch the ball. That's not the point for me. When I seen the leg, the toy, I seen it going up and hitting his arm, and he makes a movement as if he's trying to hit it. He moves his arm out into an unnatural position, as people would call it, and then it ends up, and I'm looking going, and the minute I seen the ref going to the TV, I said to myself, he's gone. He's gone because he's going to see that movement. Now, I didn't know the rule or the law. I was just looking at it as a football fan trying to make, you know, sense of it in some sort of rational way. And I said to the fella beside me, the Chelsea fan, I said, he's moved his arm. He's going to be gone. And he was like, are you serious? I said, yeah, it will happen. And it did happen. But I don't know. Like, Shani.
There's no double jeopardy with a handball. It's not like a tackle. It's not like a last-ditch tackle to deny a goal-scoring opportunity. The ball is going in. The ball is going in. So it's a deliberate handball to prevent a goal. It's not even a goal score. The ball is going in. So that's just the rules. I don't understand the hyperbole about it and say, oh, that's harsh. Yeah, maybe the rule is harsh.
Emma Kavanagh has the exact wording and it says, where the player denies the opposing team a goal or an obvious goal scoring opportunity by a handball offence, the player is sent off wherever the offence occurs. Yes.
So
there
you go. Black and white.
The narrative by Sky and Neville. I know Neville was talking about, oh, I don't know. And like, it's the rule.
Yeah.
It's the rule. They're going on about all this fairness. Not, look, it was applied properly. VAR was huge. That's the rule. I'm sorry, Reece James, you're gone.
Because Jono says the movement of his arm was the giveaway. And that's why I thought of it. But when you actually think about it, even if he hadn't moved his arm or done nothing, he was going off because it hit his arm on the line. You know what I mean?
If he hadn't moved his arm, the ball goes in.
Yeah, but I don't know. It hits his arm and it's nearly on the way out. Yeah, it's nearly on the way out when the movement comes then. But I'm wondering, like...
So what if you deny a goal-scoring opportunity, right?
Mm.
It's a yellow card
and
we get a penalty and you miss the penalty.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
No double jeopardy there.
Yeah, but if he gets sent off, yes, and Salah misses the penalty, Salah misses the penalty. You know,
yeah, but they're down to 10 men.
Yeah, I understand that, but punished. It'd be weird to see... It'd be weird to see, like, say if that happened in the box, say on the penalty spot, and the ball drops, and Reece James or any other defender in the Premier League this season.
Happened on the penalty spot, it probably wouldn't have been a red card, but because he's.
Would it have been a penalty?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what I mean by that is, if he goes to play that,
if he's changing the direction of the ball by moving his hand towards the ball, which he did,
yeah,
then it's a penalty. That's the rule. But the reason why it was a red is because he stopped the goal. He's made a save.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of it in regards to if that's on the penalty spot and there's a bit of a scramble and he kind of puts his leg up, it hits his toy and comes up and hits his arm, right? Would a penalty be given? Forget the whole movement of his hand.
Yeah, it would, because he's moving his hand towards the ball.
Yeah, I think he is as well. I think when it hits his toy, it goes up and I do see a bit of a movement.
If Chelsea get that, there's no talking about, oh, why is it this, why is it that? We'd be just told that's the rule.
Yeah,
but that's the bias in the media towards it. And you had the Muppets on Match of the Day. I don't even watch Match of the Day, but I just seen articles about it all day. They have to talk about something, lads.
I think Sky were actually setting us up really nicely to lose that, and they needed Chelsea to win that. And the way the game was going, that's the way they needed the result to be. And because of that decision, they felt, oh, it's ruined the game. But that's not Liverpool's fault. That's Reece James' fault.
Did Sky at any stage, because you know me, when the match is over, I have no interest. But did Sky at any stage show, you know the way they show this 3D fucking thing and they can go, look, this is where the ref was standing when this happened. Did he have a look at the ref's position in the whole thing? Like,
no, we thought he was looking straight in the toilet, to be honest.
Anthony Taylor actually called for the penalty before VAR because right. all the players surrounded him. So he didn't actually miss the decision. He looked at the camera then. He was told the VAR, yeah, just check it again. Yeah. You just got to call just check it again. Right. That's the thing. The fact I think we spent 10 minutes too much even talking about it, to be honest with you, because it's just, that's the fucking rule, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Keith, I come to you, the penalty itself, because the amount of Liverpool fans I know that are mad nervous when Salah stands over a penalty.
I'm one of
them.
I can't get my head around it because I'm always nervous when Salah takes a penalty. He hasn't missed one.
Is it because he's left footed?
No, it's not that. There's some great Messi's left footed. He could take a penalty. I don't know if it's the way he takes his run and he blasts them. I think his penalties are not getting better, but I think when he started taking them, there was a few scuttery ones. There was a few scuttery ones down the middle.
They're the ones that are in your
sort of memory. Do you know what I mean? But he doesn't miss them. He's excellent. So I think I may be over the fear of him stepping up and taking it, but we always do have that sort
18 in a row, is it?
Yeah, something like that. Ridiculous. It's a crazy stat, and it's brilliant.
Van Nistelrooy numbers.
It's amazing. Like, whereas if you compare him to a James Milner, right? James Milner, it's calm, collected, steps up. You never think he's going to miss. Salah just looks a bit more helter-skelter when he's taking them.
It's the long run-up,
but he arcs his run every time. He does a little hop and he bends his run, and then he just goes. And he's placing them now, and I think once he's placed them, they look great. It's the scuttery ones.
LFC Aaron says, what is a foul and isn't nowadays? No idea. Seems our players don't know either. Potluck. And Norman says, 126 goals for Liverpool now for Salah. Incredible. It really is. It's every week we seem to talk about how good he is.
He's going about what's a foul. It's all about now letting the game flow, but it's going to take someone to get that leg snapped now because players are going to be going in. Did you see a man's challenge off Burnley today?
No, I haven't seen any football today. I was at the beach.
He should be locked up. He should be in prison. Ashley Barnes.
In the box.
And he two-foots your man in the air in the quad and then starts rolling around the ground. And I'm thinking, I was only saying last week, Burnley, let them do what they want, but the stories just write themselves. You'll see it'll probably be he doesn't get a game for England, so they'll probably definitely bring it up on Match of the Day too tonight.
Mr. East too, he says slap ball was an East London thing back in the day in George Mitchell school. So there you go, slap ball is known in London, as Grizz just said. But look, it goes to half time. There's uproar. He books Mendy. He books somebody else. It's all going off. Rudiger and Tuchel is on the sideline. Tuchel hasn't quite worked out how to put his hand to his mouth and talk to people. He looks like he's singing a song, which is another thing to add to the reason why I don't like him. But it gets to half time, and you know, second half overall, Grizz, I'll come to you. Chelsea make it known what they're going to do. You know, they whip Havertz and they take off.
Can't
they look injured though?
Yeah, he was injured.
And they bring Kovacic on and they bring on
Thiago Silva.
And you know straight away, when Liverpool tip off, Grizz, Chelsea literally just run back towards their own goal. And you knew it was coming. And start of the second half, are you still confident? Look, it's against 10 men. We know how good we are at the back with regards to pinning people in. We do it all the time. You know, did you feel confident? Because I feel like, I know it's against 10 men yesterday, but Chelsea are very well drilled. And I think it's led on to stuff about substitution, which we get to. But were you confident going into the start of the second half that we know what Chelsea are going to do, but we'll still go and beat them?
Yeah, I thought the second half started off like the first half, where first 15 minutes, we just locked them up in there. Their changes were obvious. He was never going to stop playing the back three centre backs and the wing backs. So he brings on who I call one of the most underrated centre backs in recent times, Thiago Silva. Even at this age, he was magnificent, by the way, when he came on. He was fucking brilliant. But But we, Gav, you said that we're very solid at the back and we're very good at closing in teams and pressing them and not laying them out, even with 11. So with Turner, I totally expected that. And I totally expected us to take advantage of that. I was very disappointed with our second half, though. Very. And Jurgen Klopp's more than anyone else's. Because I think Tuchel done what he had to do. And he made the difference at halftime, whereas our coach didn't. So whatever he told them at halftime, and then sort of his lack of changes during the game when he saw that it's not working, I thought, I thought it was poor, Gaff. I can't get away from it. I think it was still the fear of Lukaku that kept Fabinho on the pitch. Otherwise, there was no reason to keep Fabinho on the pitch. Do you remember at Stamford Bridge, lads, when a similar thing happened and they went down to 10 men? Mm. And instantly he brought on Thiago because he knew that would be the difference maker. He literally didn't have the balls to do it, Gav. He literally didn't have the balls, or call it whatever you want, trust in the players on the bench. Maybe he thought Thiago's not up to full speed yet. Whatever the reasons are, he didn't change it enough. Especially after that initial burst that we had of 15 minutes, where we took a few shots, and that's another thing.
Rain shots in on them,
yeah. But that's another thing. I was bemused at why we stopped taking shots. Like suddenly, we stopped taking shots and we tried to go through them. Whereas they were, as you said, backed up on their penalty area, and the likes of Henderson, Fabinho, Virgil should have taken more shots. I think we totally ran out of ideas. And energy, worryingly, energy as well in that second half.
Yeah, I felt it was frustrating. You know, Salah's ball into Jota is unbelievable. The outside of the boot, and he spins it in over Thiago Silva's head. And Jota should do better. And Jota knows that. He gets too much on the header. We have a couple of shots from, there's one from Henderson that's close, one from Van Dijk, Fabinho forces a save. Fabinho. You know, and there's a couple of scrambles when we get down the left-hand side and the right-hand side. But overall, I thought, Shani, like, you have to give Chelsea some credit. The 45 minutes at Anfield with 10 men, and I know they're a good team, and I know they've good players, but you have to give them credit in that second half, because I felt frustrated by Liverpool, and I thought Chelsea were, you knew what, like Chelsea were looking at this from the very start. Chelsea were going there and taking a draw. There's no fucking doubt about it in my mind, the way they set up and the way they looked to counter. But even if you look at Chelsea defensively in that second half, Shawnee, and not on top of that, Kovacic has a good chance. Lukaku has a really good chance. It's blocked by Matip, I think. You have to give them credit, Shani. I thought they were excellent second half.
Yeah, they were good. Look, they funneled those into the spaces where they wanted us to go, and we never really made them uncomfortable, I don't think, because, look, anyone can have pops from range. We didn't get in behind at all. I don't think... That's my problem with this squad that we have at the moment. Obviously, you have Jota to come in off the bench at a later stage, but due to Bobby's injury, he comes in, so their approach is kind of the same, but it's too predictable. They just funneled those down the side and said, look, they're going to whip in balls and we'll deal with them all day. And that's the way they did it. And they still had that threat on the counter, because Alonso was still marauding down the left-hand side, and Lukaku was still operating in those channels.
They knew Alonso was their out ball because Trent was going to push inside and
we were timid because of that. And I agree with Grizz, because I think he leaves Fabinho on as an insurance policy when he should kind of go for it a little bit more. Like the standard that this Liverpool team has reached from the club, even at home, you expect us to go and win every home game, no matter who we're playing. You expect us to go and have a go and win every home game, because that's what we've more or less been like. Let's be honest. Far last year, when there was no fans there, but we were very predictable, very lethargic. I think Klopp was a little bit too conservative in terms of the substitutions. Like, this is my issue, Gav. Minamino's excellent in pre-season. Chamberlain is excellent in pre-season, but when it comes to game time, Klopp has no faith in them. He didn't bring them on, and they both give you something different, because Minamino can't make runs in behind and get it, and he comes short and he drags players out of spaces. Chamberlain has a crack on him, Chamberlain is a player who can get the ball out of his feet and have a crack around him from everywhere. You look at Burnley last year, he can occupy spaces and get the ball out and snapshot and cause havoc. Thiago is more of a conductor, someone who creates chances for you to get in behind, but we just played for it. We played in front of Chelsea for 45 minutes. I thought we were very timid. I don't think we were as ruthless as we would have liked him to be. I don't think the subs are great. I don't know why he takes off. You can't tell me he's managing minutes, because you're taking Robbo off at 82. What's 8 minutes going to do when the fella's going? He's going to go and play 180 minutes for Scotland and anyway in the next 2 weeks. Honestly, I just don't get it. Like, and this is my point. If Klopp doesn't trust these players, then why are they being kept around? Because there has been offers for them, obviously. So they're no use to us, Gav. Because they've been performing. It's not like that they're no good. Because Minamino was very bright in pre-season. And like I said, Ox was also very bright in pre-season. Origi's not even on the bench. But I've no issue with that. Because, to be honest with you, I've had enough of Origi just coming on and slogging it around for 20 minutes at the end of a game, to be honest with you. I think he's past the sell-by date. So I think this is where the hold-up will be with us this season. And we have options, and it does look like the squad depth, but there's nobody there to really change the game, if you get me. If Firmino was out and it's Jota coming in, that's the only way. We need somebody to supplement Mane, to supplement Salah, either in the wide areas, because they just haven't, they weren't able to unlock them yesterday. And we are very, very predictable. And for me, it's a massive opportunity missed, and it's 2 points dropped.
Grizz, I want to come to you because we're going to talk about the substitutions in a bit more detail, and I want to tie it in with the whole window closing on Tuesday, because I think there's something in it, and I think a lot of people have reacted to yesterday's game with, we need this, we need that, and that's understandable, you know, that's what happens when you don't win a game. You get an awful lot of that reaction, but tie it in with the substitutions and the window closing on Tuesday kind of amplified that. But I want to go back to something that has been building over the last week, and it was Romelu Lukaku and Virgil van Dijk. And Romelu Lukaku was being spoken up as the man that was going to destroy Virgil van Dijk. He was going to run over him. He was going to do this. He was going to do that. I didn't see any of that yesterday, Chris. I didn't see any of that yesterday. Look, he looked to me like the Romelu Lukaku that left England a couple of years ago, and now he's back. That's exactly what he looked like to me.
Yeah, look, no, I think he's a far better player than the one that left.
But, exact same player.
But no, he's a far better player. Yeah, of course he is.
He was a good player the last time. But he just disappears in games, and he will disappear in games this season.
I think the media let Lukaku down, because nobody dominates Virgil and Matip. So that was gone out the window.
I was just going to say, absolutely spot on. He was up against, and I've said it before, the best centre-back pairing in world football when they're fit. I've said it. There's no centre-back pairing in world football that's better than Virgil van Dijk and Matip. And both are used to playing physical strikers like him. You asked me directly about Virgil, Gavin, and Virgil was imperious. Like, the beauty of Virgil is that he makes it look easy. That's the beauty of him, when it's not even easy. So that's Virgil out of the way. Like, he was never going to get the better. There was one on the right hand side where Virgil trips or something, or you know, he gets a turn on him, which he will. He will get a turn on a centre back. I think he was clever in how he. I think Tuchel used him cleverly. He knew the focus would be on Virgil. Lukaku. And that's why when they did have 10 men, 11 men, the space was there for Havertz and Mount, the other player. So I think his coach used Lukaku very well, very cleverly. Lukaku himself, obviously we won't know how the game would have been with 11 men, but I thought he was a threat when they had 11 men. I thought there was a couple of chances. There was a couple of times where he turns Matip. Matip tries to get the ball before him, but in the second half it was a walk in the park for our lads. And as you say, on one on one situations with Matip as well, Matip showed his absolute quality. But as far as a striker goes, in terms of playing up against two elite centre backs, I don't think Lukaku done bad or it didn't look bad, or he wasn't sort of a disaster. I think he'd done what he could, what he tried, and obviously it was an impossible task. As I think Shawnee says, you don't get the better of Virgil van Dijk even with 11 men. With 10 men, you've got no chance.
He's going to maul 95% of the centre-backs in the league. Like, he'll maul Ruben Diaz when they play him. He'll maul John Stones. He'll maul them.
Sam Tandy asks, will the media build up McCarthy versus Ruben Diaz when they play each other?
Yeah, you know, that's why, like, you just... This is how good these two lads are at the back. They were never like this. This was a this was Sky trying to create. Like, I thought it was bleeding Anthony Joshua fighting Tyson Fury the way they were going on all week.
Yeah,
honestly, I was expecting Eddie Hearn to bring the match ball out. That's the way they were building it up. Yeah, a Frank Warren production at Anfield at 5:30 on a Saturday. Like, this is what they do, lads. They give these the big build-ups. Remember Red Monday, United, Liverpool?
Yeah.
The worst game I've ever seen in my life. He was never going to get any change out of either, the boys. Never.
No.
And that's not a slight on Lukaku. He will maul 95% of the centre-backs in that league. That's just... he's up against the two best.
There's a couple of super chats in here from Aaron. He says, for me, Henderson at left centre midfield didn't work. Either play him as a DM or right centre midfield or play Keita instead. I'll get on to Keita now in a second. Let me see. I think MDT, he's going on about Trent's handball against Newcastle and Man City. I know the Man City one you're talking about. Azim Mahmoud, and I'm going to put this up on the screen. Sorry, give me one second. It's a long one, so I want to read it out because it's something we're going to come to in a minute, all right? But he says, when will the Liverpool fans or pundits put real pressure on FSG to back our manager? We continue to fall for FSG propaganda. A day or two left to back him, or we live in regret. I'm going to get on to that in a minute because I want to see what way people are feeling on that. And, you know, without being completely ridiculous one way or the other, there is a conversation around what we need in the summer and how we'll feel on Tuesday or Wednesday morning if nothing happens in the window.
Brace yourself.
We'll see. We'll absolutely see. So, Grace, I come to you. I didn't think this was real, but just tell me it was. Someone belonging to Keita having a right go because he didn't start the other day or yesterday. What did you make of that? Because it's becoming very frequent for me. Becoming very frequent now where you see representatives or family or thing like literally throwing their hoopings around about this player or that player starting, and I don't think it helps anyone. Mostly probably Naby Keita, to be honest.
No, it doesn't. But you're right. It's becoming prominent. I don't think it's his agent per se, like his play agent. I think it's one of his managers.
Consigliere for Naby Keita, whatever the fuck that means.
What does that mean? Okay. I think he's an extended mate, you could say probably, but obviously from his party, from his side, from his connection. Not even sure. Probably poor Naby knew anything about it. But yeah, it doesn't help anyone. But these players, these agents, these reps are becoming more and more prominent in the game, have more and more say, are becoming more and more powerful. So it's one of those things that either the player tries to control himself or they'll just carry on doing it until a manager calls them out. There's nothing more to it, I think. Jurgen Klopp won't probably ever get to hear about it, so I don't think we should even discuss it really as well. I don't think Jurgen Klopp, it'll get to Jurgen Klopp's desk that XYZ said something about Naby Keita should have started, or Klopp's letting him down, I think he said, or something, or his fault or something.
Yeah. I want to move on to the subs, right? Because I think the subs ties in well. So I'm going to use the substitutions yesterday to tie into the window closing, all right? And we'll do another 10 minutes or so before we head off. And Keith, I'll come to you because he's enforcing a change in Jota, all right, for Firmino. I think the Henderson one, I think it makes sense because, Henderson hasn't played a lot of football and it's midfield, and although we're on top, still a lot of running to do back and forwards because it was a kind of end-to-end game at times when Chelsea managed to get out. And then, like Shawnee said earlier, he makes that change Robertson on 82, right, in a game. Now, if that was 11 against 11, I'd say, you know what, he's making that change, Robertson's running out a bit of steam, it's end-to-end, Chelsea are threatening, it makes sense. But there's 10 minutes to go, Keith, where were literally on top of this game. We're all over them, right? Bar the odd excursion up the pitch every couple of minutes by Chelsea. But overall, we're on top for me. And when I look at the bench there, I go, right, he has no Origi, probably because he's gone with Jota as his forward. But he has Oxlade-Chamberlain there, and he has Keita there, and he has Minamino there. And he could have put either of them three on for me. He could have put Ox on because we're taking shots. He likes a shot, right? Yep. And he likes to get into those little half spaces and try to get by people and get to the byline and stuff. Keita can go by a person, can see a pass. We've seen it, okay? Minamino, tight situation, you know, low centre of gravity. That's what I was thinking Minamino. I was actually thinking Minamino would be the sub, because when you're seeing the action going on around the box and little intricacies around the box and trying to get in different places, I thought maybe he'll do that. But he does Tsimikas, and I immediately thought the situation in the game, the way it is, I thought that's a strange one for me, Keith. And I looked at the bench and went, he doesn't fancy any of them. And then on top of that, I'm thinking, is that a kind of a message he's sending? I'm not too sure, because you know the way it is now. Everything's a message. Everything's another. There's another angle to everything you do. What did you make of it? And do you think there's a trust issue there? Because when I looked at it yesterday, I did think it's somebody with that little spark you need in around the box, something like that. And he didn't go with it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, the Jota one happens early. It's enforced. We know that. That would have happened, obviously, later. The Henderson one, again, I can understand, because the midfield needed legs. And I think when you're set up against a block like Chelsea, and I'll say this, I think Chelsea are, if not the best, one of the best teams in the world to adapt with losing a player like that. You know, they just set five across their back. They had defensive-minded midfielders in front of them, and it was come and break us down. Obviously, we're going to be going a lot side to side. Henderson, I think, only looked more comfortable going in, so I could understand him getting the hook. Maybe would have done it earlier, but look, that's just me. The last one, the Tsimikas one. Minamino, I think, has a little bit of guile and a little bit of craft, but I don't know if they trust that he's physical enough to go up there against Azpilicueta and Thiago Silva and Andreas Christensen. You know, Rudiger, the big, big lads. So maybe it was a physicality thing. Naby Keita and Ox could have gone on there as well. The left side was the troubling side for me for the whole game. I thought we were so poor on that left side. The Tsimikas one, I said I would have started him, but to put him on an 86, the only thing there is, right, we're going to just lash a few crosses in. That's it. That's telling them what we're going to do. We're not going to try and, you know, if you bring in Naby Keita, he's going to try and get on the ball in the sort of half space between the midfield and the attack and try and slide something in. Right? That's what Naby Keita will do. They'll put pressure on their sort of back line and their midfielders more so.
Yeah, but he won't do it from a central midfield spot.
He could do it from the left hand.
Yeah, he kind of tries to get onto the corner of the box and make things happen.
Yeah, he could have done that. And we know Oxlade-Chamberlain is going to get it, and he's going to just have shots. I thought our tactic was to have shots at him, because if you notice Mendy, he palms a lot back into play with his saves. You know what I mean? Like, I was like that. They're doing this, they're taking these shots. When Virgil's hitting one from 35 yards and we're hitting these shots, it says this is a tactic that we're going to start hitting them, because this fella, he pans a lot back into play. And then we just stopped it. So, look, I think when it came to the last sub, it was clear. It's right. He's got a good delivery. Tsimikas, he put one on to Jota's head in the last game. Yeah. And we're going to just try and put crosses in, and that's our tactic. And I think it was the wrong tactic. But you could probably understand, you know, hindsight, again, is a wonderful thing. If he pops up and puts one in on someone else's head, it's a great sub. But I just think, you know, Jurgen Klopp is not great at making subs, in my opinion. I think he's over there. Shani touched on about squad trust. People are talking about, you know, sign. There's no point having 28 players. Jurgen Klopp only uses a handful of them. He only done it at Dortmund as well. And he doesn't want big squads. He doesn't want bloated squads. He doesn't want a lot of players. So there's no point these lads if you're not going to play them.
So have ones that you're going to play then.
Exactly. Yeah, Trust them. Do you know what I mean? Get rid of, if you're getting rid of Shaqiri and you're, what's the point in having Divock Origi? He's too loyal to these players, is my point I'm getting at. You know, he's too loyal. I don't think we move Origi on. I think Origi's there till his contract runs out. I think Minamino, like, if they could move him out, they'd move him out because I don't think he's physical enough. But I just think Jurgen Klopp, if they can't move them out, I don't think he's ruthless enough. I don't think he ever was. Even with Dortmund, I don't think he was ruthless enough. Kagawa went to Manchester United, he spoke about, you know, how emotional it was and this, that. But then he took him back with open arms and tears were flowing and all that. He's very, very loyal to his players to the point that he's probably too loyal. I wouldn't have selected the team he selected.
He wouldn't be loyal to them if he had players of quality to replace them with. That's the way I see it.
Sorry, go on, Grizz. You wanted to jump
in. Loyal to Bobby.
Yeah, it was pretty much similar. I was going to say, look, we keep hearing and we keep saying, even ourselves, between ourselves, we've been chatting about his loyalty and how he works with a small squad and how he likes it, the unity and the team bonding and spirit. But then who's to blame? Because there will be a blame eventually if not enough is done to plan ahead. So no one is doubting, and we've said it before, no one is doubting the quality of this 13, 14 players. There's no doubting. We are probably favourites along with City and Chelsea. Maybe a bit less than them, but I wouldn't say much. We're all on a level now, right? Because not only did those two teams finish ahead of us, they enhanced their squad even further. So again, Chelsea and Man United. Chelsea didn't. But they showed yesterday that this geezer's had a pre-season with them on top of the ending to them, ended up European champions, blah, blah, blah. Forget the other teams. Let's talk about ourselves. If we're going to continue saying, oh, he's loyal to these players, there's no point bringing in players that, there's no point in bringing in players because he's loyal to the ones he's got. I don't see where that takes us. Do you get what I'm saying? Where does that take us?
If he's loyal to players, he's picking them, putting them on. So a trust is a part of loyalty. So if he's not that loyal, if he hardly trusts them. So he's loyal because what's he keeping the lads around because they're going to earn a wage because he doesn't want the lads out of pocket. I don't get it.
He called Origi a game changer during the week.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he really?
So he calls Origi a game changer.
I'll be changing the game on his PlayStation at home because he wasn't in the fucking squad yesterday.
He asked, look, this is going to sound like an anti-Klopp rant. Maybe it is. I don't care. He called Ox. He called out a journalist and said, "Name me a skill set that our midfield doesn't have." I'm paraphrasing. That's what he meant. He meant like, if you want us to bring in a midfielder, name a skill set that our midfield doesn't have. The dynamism of Ox, he suggested, or the returning of Naby and the control he brings to us. Neither of them were used and even looked like coming on against 10 men when we absolutely should have pushed on for three points, as opposed to bringing on Thiago, who played deeper. Let's not forget, when he came on, he played deep, literally next to Fabinho, and then Tsimikas as the other change. I just think, who do we ask the question to? Because obviously we've seen loads of FSG, but I'm beginning to believe it's a collective. It's a combination of two. We can't just blame FSG. And obviously, we can't just blame Klopp. There is, you know, there is a situation here developing if we don't bring in anyone. That, for example, let's say Bobby's out for 4 or 5 weeks with this hamstring injury. What are we left with options-wise if a couple of them do actually go to internationals or whatever and come back? What are we looking at, maybe, if they do get called up to internationals and get an injury?
Cade Gordon.
What are we looking at?
So you're looking at the three that are left there, and you're looking at Divock Origi, Minamino. That's what you're looking at. But it's a mad one,
It's a mad one, Gaff, I agree.
People have asked all summer, and they've asked me, they haven't asked me, I've given me opinion. And I've said a centre-back, a midfielder, and a forward. And, you know, people have asked me, well, if they don't do anything by Tuesday, what do you think? I still think Liverpool will win the league. But I don't think they can do it in multiple competitions with the squad we have. I think we've enough there to get away in certain games with the players we have. to go and win a league title. I've no doubt about that. But when I look at what we have, and you make a good point, you know, if Firmino's out for 4 or 5 weeks, we're literally down to three. Because I stopped counting. Oxlade-Chamberlain's been touted as a fucking right back before the start of the season.
Oxlade-Chamberlain,
you know, hasn't played an awful lot of football up front for Liverpool. There's a reason for that, because he's not.
So why didn't he bring Oxlade-Chamberlain on for Mane yesterday and push Jota out wide and play Ox as a false nine?
Before we go, one more answers, and then I want, I'm going to give you a question, looking at Tuesday, right? So, man of the match, one word, please, Shawnee.
Van Dijk.
Keith.
Van Dijk.
Grizz.
Van Dijk.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I think Van Dijk was exceptional yesterday. So, Tuesday, 11 o'clock, the window's going to close. There's all sorts going on in the transfer window, as we've seen over the last couple of days. Nothing's come out, really, from Liverpool. Klopp said if there's one player out there I could find that could better us, I'd try to do it, I promise. I think that's a bit of a flippant remark. I think there's loads of players out there that you could try go for.
This is what's annoying me, Gav.
Go on, I'll let you go first.
Like, you turn around saying that there's someone who can come in who will absolutely make a difference. There's fucking loads of players. For one, there's Basuma. We could have signed him 6 weeks ago. Now, I'm happy to... I'm not in the internet space where there's no middle ground where you have to be absolutely FSG out or FSG in. I recognise the good things that they do and have done for the club and the structure that they've put in place. But I do feel there has been times where they haven't really backed the club. And like Riz said, we actually don't know whether it's a congregation of both Klopp, Edwards and whoever's paying the bills. But you cannot tell me that we were all in agreement. We played games in the summer and some of us were signing 10 players. It was tongue in cheek stuff. But you could have looked at it and broke it down and said you could actually probably do that if you started your business now. Now we've made one signing. We bought Konate. Now that was a signing that should have been made in January. All right. So we got him anyway. Now the thing is, it's this thing whether you're going to go away from your first choice. I get that, Gav. I get that. But it's not like we need someone to go in there and be absolute nailed on starters. We can afford to buy a player who will grow into the position. Like a Basuma, all right? For example, I'll use Basuma as a midfielder. You're looking at a forward. We could have got a Malin. We could have got a Malin for the money Dortmund paid for him. Now, I don't care who his agent is. There's plenty of other players around. Now, I understand this homegrown quota shit, but that's gone out the window because Shaqiri gone. We should have had deals lined up. We need players in. You do need to supplement the squad. And I do agree with you. We can challenge with the squad that we have, but we're relying massively on luck. You're relying on your core 14 to 13 players being available 85 to 90% of the time. Now, I get that. I think we're fine at centre-back now. I don't see an issue with the centre-backs because I don't think the long-term ones will block. There's definitely an issue in the midfield and there's definitely an issue in the front line because we don't have many game-changers. We don't have someone who comes in and changes the way we play in the last 20 of a game. Somebody who, that's what we do not have. And like Keith said, or Chris, Bobby's out now for what, 4 to 5 weeks, let's say. What do we do? And I could understand if nobody was spending money. And you look at, there is clubs. Now, I'll exclude City and I'll exclude Chelsea. I'll even exclude United because they're playing a different sport at the moment in terms of the money they have readily available to spend. But we should be able to get deals done. I don't understand where it's this push from, bro. And I'm not one of these people that says FSG are pushing this out, pushing that out. I don't think FSG tell James Pearce, any of them fucking cronies, a job. I don't even think that they leak stuff to them to pour out to create perceptions. I think that's all done with because it's all guessing games. They're talking about, oh, the big summer. The only people that are saying this is these journalists. It's not FSG. They're not releasing statements. They're running the club. It should be run. And I get that, all right? But I don't want FSG out because they're fucking brilliant owners and they're doing on the pitch off the pitch that they're doing exactly what needs to be done. But they need to fucking back Klopp. Let's be honest. Let's call a spade a spade. They need to back him. And Klopp turning around saying, we don't need this. We fucking do. We do need. We need a midfielder and we need a forward.
But that's the confusion and the confliction of what they're saying of interest. Like, I totally agree with everything you said, except at the end where you're saying they have to back Klopp. Klopp's got to fucking back them.
And Free World, I didn't say that. I don't care if you don't sign players. Gavel, back me up here. I've been consistent the whole time. I told people to relax their cacks because I was thinking they will do the business. I was sure they'd do the business. Genuinely, I was thinking to myself, we definitely bring at least one more.
Yeah, me and you, and probably the four of us here, are saying.
You can watch every single podcast back. I fucking hate transfers. I can't wait until the window's closed.
Yeah, you do hate all this shit, but I think the four of us have been consistent in the fact that we thought after Canati there would be two more.
It doesn't mean that it's not a necessity, right? So I always thought to myself, they will get the business done. The window closes on the 31st of August. And I did, but I'm thinking now, there's not a sausage in the media about who we're looking at, and there's nothing. The window closes in 2 days. I'd say the likelihood is now is that we don't do the business. And for me, that's not good enough. Because I put my hand up and I'd say, yeah, I was wrong. All right, I thought they'd do the business. And the one thing I said to Gav, if they don't do the business, then questions still need to be asked.
Chris,
that's all I said.
Can I just answer the legacy summer? Because obviously that's been the key word of the summer.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Everyone's saying legacy summer. So no, there's no luck involved at all. Legacy, exactly. No, tell me it's not been a legacy summer.
Not the one we were saying.
I said legacy summer because I truly believed that this is what needed to be done in terms of creating a new spine. And so, for example, leave the Mbappe stuff out of it, right? We bought in Konate, the first midfielder that we were absolutely linked with, and I said it as well, Basuma. So that would have been two young, up-and-coming players that would have been part of this new spine that I was referring to when I said legacy summer, right? You can get the violins out probably, like, you know, I'm explaining here, 11 o'clock in the night. And then someone like a Marlon, who's 22, 23, probably, I think something like that, someone else to come in. And that's your three that create a new spine and that start the new legacy. And if they don't, absolutely questions have to be asked. So I'm not going to suddenly change it, my opinion, and just because they haven't done it. Now, what we're trying to establish, what we're trying to chat between mates like we are, we're trying to discuss and analyze why this hasn't happened. Is it FSG not pulling in the funds? Or is it Jurgen Klopp saying, I'm not interested in
that's
new players?
But that's what I wanted to ask you, Grizz. Like, you know, you will get people that are just fucking so frustrated at the owners, right?
I'll tell you what the frustration is.
Let me finish. One small thing.
We will be, you know, Shawnee said about not enough business. If we don't bring in another player, us and Newcastle are the only teams that have brought in one player. Us and who? Newcastle. And we all know what everyone thinks of their owners.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I wanted to ask you, and this is what I'm saying. You're getting people that are hugely frustrated with the owners, right? Because they see, like, the way I look at it is I say to myself, I think we need two players. And what I mean by that is if we want to compete on the front, like we've seen a Champions League draw the other day, we're going to get a little bit, some fans get frustrated at the fact that we just disregard domestic competitions, cup-wise, and we've the league. Now, I've said it earlier in the show, I still think Liverpool have enough to win a league title with the squad they have. But if we want to compete on all these fronts, I think we need to bring two in, right? And then I just, and that's me. I say, we think we need to bring, if Tuesday night comes, I'll say to myself, don't think they've done enough there. Now, I can't honestly tell you, hand on heart, with any sort of knowledge or information, who has made that decision. And this is what I'm trying to get at, Chris.
We'll never know that.
Cap. No, we'll never know that, but this...
We were all in agreement here that two minimum was needed.
But this is the question I want to ask. And I'll put it to you, Grizz, and then I'll come to you, Keith, right, to get your opinion on the whole thing. But the question I'm trying to say to you is, Grizz, do we have to take Klopp at face value when he says, you know, I'm happy with the squad, blah, 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 blah? Or do we look at it and do we say to ourselves, because I will genuinely, on Wednesday morning, we've signed nobody going, we can do the league, but I can't see us doing the two big competitions. Do we have to take Klopp at face value? Or do we have to look at it and go, listen, this is just towing a line here?
Yeah, what I think he might be
towing. That's a tough question, Gav.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
That's a tough question. Because we know what Klopp's done for us and what he brings to us, to our lives, and what he's done for Liverpool as a club. But if it's Klopp towing the line, he's put himself under huge pressure this season for no reason, in my opinion. Because if it's Klopp's decision to go with what he's got, and that's what he's saying in every press conference, and he's not just saying it, lads. Let's call a spade as a spade. He's not just saying it. He's emphatically saying it.
He's emphasizing it when he says it, yeah.
He's emphasizing and get visibly agitated. Like, you know how Sean gets agitated about transfers? Klopp's doing that. He's getting stopped. And he's been doing it since his time here. Emphasizing about, I don't care about transfers. I just want to bring up my players, coach them, make them better. We can use the crowd. We can use our unity. We get all that because that's the man he is. And that's the man who's in charge of Liverpool. And that's the man who's brought us success. But we're now at a stage, and we've all agreed, it's not only me, we've all agreed, even the most FSG man in, Mr. Keith Plunkett, or, you know, others, you know, we've all said that now there needs to be a Liverpool 2.0. Eventually, in the next 3 years, this team won't be still winning league titles and competing for all the titles by the end of his contract, by the time his contract ends. Now, doesn't he care about that stage? Because that's the question I'm going to put to him. If I was ever a chance to ask Klopp anything, would be, you do need to build for the future. So are we saying next summer we need to bring in 5 players suddenly? Are we actually going to do that? Are we ever going to do that under this ownership and under this coach? Because of not doing enough in one window again. We're already, in my opinion, I've always said it, we're 2 windows behind. But two, three a window is how you do planning for the future. This is very bad planning, in my opinion, if nothing happens.
It's a strange one. Like Darius Hoyt says, and he says, we're at the stage where fans are calling Klopp Wenger 2.0 simply because of the perceived restrictions around spending. You know, somebody else asked there, are we not making enough of the COVID losses? I did see something in the Echo today, 120 million odd. But
Do you remember the Wenger chat?
Yeah, but
in our WhatsApp. Do you remember our WhatsApp, the Wenger chat?
Yeah.
The German Wenger.
I get that. I do get part of that where you go, look, they've lost a shitload of money, right? And people would say, but this club and that club and that club are spending, spending, spending. Well, 3 of them are Chelsea, City and United. And like Shani said, they play a different game to everybody else. But there's others around us spending. Now, the argument against that would be, well, Liverpool have always done this. They spend what they earn and they don't go above that. They keep themselves absolutely stable. And me and Shawnee spoke at length about it in January, going, look, you need to step away from that at some stage. Because I believe the structure they have, right, which is admirable and works and doesn't put your club in debt and doesn't put you at risk and is very self-sufficient, it's very difficult to rebuild a side, especially if you're looking to get high prices on players and in order to sign players, unless you're willing to sell your biggest stars to try rebuild. And that's not a rebuild for me. That's just madness, in my opinion. You're trying to keep hold of these best players. And they've signed contracts with really, 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 really good players. And we're probably expecting Henderson and Salah to come, and people sarcastically have said Henderson will be announced tomorrow and Salah on Tuesday. You know, the sort of way. I get the argument for and against spending a lot of money. I do. I genuinely do. You can put COVID losses down. You can put stability down. But then at the same time, you can turn and go, like Grizz said, when you get to next summer, right? When you get to next summer, and Milner's definitely not going to be playing for me. I can't see him being in any way regular, right? And you start looking at players around it. Like, you get to next summer, and you can't tell me Minamino's there in the squad. Origi's there in the squad. Do you know what I mean? And a couple of others.
Ox.
Yeah, you know, not even Keita Ox. Maybe one of those. You know what I mean? Origi. And then you're saying to yourself, well, they all have to go. And for them to go, you need to bring in quality. And how do you do it based on the way you've done it so far? The only option, and that's where I get people's frustration, you look at it and you go, they'll sell Salah for 120 million quid and they'll bring three 40 million pound players in, and that's one another one out, but they've got three in instead of, you know, getting rid of these four or five that they don't need.
We shouldn't have to sell Salah,
this, but this is what I'm saying, Shawnee. This is where people get frustrated with, why isn't there a bit of, not only what we need for this season, it's about forward planning. And what I'm saying is, you have to take a hit at some stage. It's admirable trying to keep a club solid and on a financial basis where you go, we're not in any debt and we're not in any risk.
I think it is.
But it's admirable.
These fuckers know that the Super League is coming in.
Yeah, but just let me finish for a minute. Just let me finish for a minute. It's admirable what they're doing. But I think they're running into a bit of a cul-de-sac here for me. Just a little bit. And I'm not asking FSG to go out and spend 200 million between now and Tuesday. That's fucking ridiculous. What I'm saying is, even if they look at their losses over the year and they say to themselves, look, we're going to have to put 50 or 60 million quid down here. We're going to have to. And all right, we're taking it now and it's going to hurt. But next summer, instead of trying to sign five, we're only signing two or three.
Absolutely.
And we forward planned. And I've said it all summer. Your midfielder should definitely be a midfielder that can challenge and be forward planning. And most definitely your striker should be that. And I just can't. Yeah. I just see. And I could be wrong. They could just pull off a fucking miracle. I don't know. But I just see, especially when you come to next summer, regardless what happens this season, I see them going and Klopp looking at a massive bottleneck in this squad. A massive bottleneck.
What I want to ask, and I know Keith probably wants to jump in. I'm so sorry, Keith. Just one last point. What is the role of Michael Edwards in this and the scouts? Like, yep. 100%. What's his job? Like, what's he done then? What's he been paid
I said
for?
This and I got lashed out of it.
Oh, yeah. You might as well furlough him.
He's getting away with murder, I think.
Yeah. I think it's either FSG or Klopp, but no one's mentioning Michael Edwards. He's not selling players well anymore, and that's probably the market that's affecting that. You know what I mean? We're not able to get, and I'm not on about the likes of Origi and all that. I think Klopp is too loyal to these guys. I'm on about the squad players taking too long or taking too much of a hit. I think Edwards is probably getting away a bit as well. It's hard. Look, Pete, I'm not an FSG cheerleader. I just think they're a good ownership group. I think, you know, they've brought us success, how far they can go. I just think we ignore a lot of the things Klopp says and think it's all that he's only saying that. I don't think Klopp wants loads of big signings. I think he wants reinforcements. But I think he says, right, whether it's a 50 million pound player or it's a 10 million pound player, I want a player. And I think fans, we jump to the conclusions. They're having a shit transfer window. I don't really give a shit about a transfer window until the end of the season. I think you judge your transfers at the end of the season. If you win the league, happy days. If you don't, but the lads are right what they're saying. You have to future plan. You have to be bringing in players. And maybe they're not looking at a midfielder because of Harvey Elliott. Maybe Harvey Elliott is now the midfielder that they're saying, right, we don't need to buy a midfielder. Harvey Elliott is now a central midfield option.
I know, to be all right with that.
I had him as a forward option, so I think we need a forward.
Yeah, they probably have him as both.
But Freewald says there, right, and we'll finish up now in a second, but Freewald says there, and he makes a good point. Maybe Edwards has no budget to work with. So he's actually, hold on, maybe he doesn't, because that's why he's actively not looking to get rid of player A, B and C, because he's no budget to do anything with it if he does.
Right.
Like, there's so many scenarios here that we don't know, and we're only here to discuss it. We're not spouting facts.
My issue with Edwards is, you talk about, like, why didn't we get Haaland from Salzburg? Why weren't we on Bellingham from Birmingham? Why weren't we? United was showing him around Carrington and all. So why weren't? And you can actually see now, we get that lad from Newcastle. They are actually doing what Real Madrid done after Neymar. Remember, Real Madrid literally just bought every single Brazilian that had any ounce of talent, because they were just saying, right, well, we're not going to miss the next Neymar. They got Kate Gordon from Derby. He was everyone in the, and he looks brilliant.
He looks really good.
But they snapped him up from Derby because there was teams all over Germany looking at him. And it was the same with this lad from Newcastle. So they're afraid to miss out on them ones. Air scouting should be better. We should have got Basuma from, where did he come from? Lille or Rennes? Where did he come from?
Rennes, I think.
Yeah. Why aren't we looking at them then? Do you know what I mean? Why is this an incessant need then to have to go and say, oh, well, we're going to, because we're not going to pay fucking 100 million for Jude Bellingham. I don't care who his idol is. No. We're just not going to do it. Unless we sell someone on and the money is there to do it. Now, I actually don't have an axe to grind with FSG, but they just need to back Klopp here because they're not bad owners. This is that model. That model is failing them at this moment in time. But the one thing I will say, and this will be the last thing I say, Gav, we go on about what Klopp says and what he doesn't say. Klopp will never say a bad word. Klopp was visibly rattled in January, and you could tell he was screaming out for a centre-half, and they gave him Kabak and Davies. And when, like, he was kind of like talking about Davies in the Oak saying, well, I never seen him play. They just told me he's coming.
Well, Indy B says, not being funny, but you boys sound like you're throwing the toys out of the pram because we've drawn a game against Chelsea. No, Indy B. Let me answer that, because we get accused at times quite a lot of being FSG apologists. We don't discuss FSG enough. We don't criticise enough. We don't question enough. And what we're trying to do here tonight is, I don't think we're screaming, kicking and screaming. What we're trying to look at is every different scenario with regards to Liverpool, looking back on this summer and towards the window closing on Tuesday, and saying, well, if they didn't do that, why? And is it FSG? Is it Klopp? Is it Michael Edwards? Is it the market? Is it the losses? Whatever. We aren't the gospel, right? What we say isn't 100% absolute fact, because this is a show about opinions. So we're trying to give opinions on why is that happening? Could that be happening? And we're trying to be as fair to everybody that has any opinion on whether it's Klopp, players, chief executives, wherever they might be, owners. We're trying to give people as fair as a picture as we can. And that's why all different comments are being thrown in there tonight, all different opinions and stuff like that. And there's people in the chat that don't agree with each other, and that's absolutely fine. It's all about opinion. But we're just trying to look at it in a sense of the window doesn't hinge on a result against Chelsea. Like, if we'd have beaten Chelsea 3-1 there yesterday, I'd be having this conversation tonight.
Same
regardless,
questions.
You know,
same,
the sort
same
of way.
Conversation.
But it's a very strange one for me, and I worry a little bit about competing on all fronts with this squad. I think we can compete on one of the major things. I think we can.
I guarantee if Klopp gets an objective list at the start of the season, the FA Cup and the Carabao doesn't even.
No. What I mean is the two big competitions. I think it's hard with that squad to roll, even with a bit of rotation. I think it's hard to
push.
But
even with that thinking, lads, we pride ourselves often of being the trophy winners, like the leaders of the trophy winners. If we carry on negating the FA Cups and the League Cups, how long before other teams start catching up to us, like the Man Cities and the Chelseas, who do take these cups seriously? So
they have three squads. They have a squad
for
every competition.
We have to build up towards that, though.
We can't compete with them in that sense, Chris.
No, financially we can't, but we were based on smart scouting, smart analysis of players, recruitment of players. Why has that suddenly stopped? It seems. I think Shawnee's point about the Super League is absolutely relevant. Is very, very relevant and prominent.
It's still in the background. That's happening. Whether you like it or not. You can show up and you can protest all you want. It's happening. Because they will do what they want. They're starting to get all these clearances now from FIFA and CAS. It's going to happen. It's going to be repackaged. It's going to be the same show they tried to sell us all last year. But it'll look more fair. But it will be an open competition. But look, 99% of the time, you're not going to get these Big 12 out of competition, and they're all banking on it. They're all banking on it.
Well, before we go, I'll ask the question. Tuesday by 11 o'clock, will Liverpool still have the same squad in place for you, ins or outs? Keith, I'll come to you first.
No, I think we'll bring one in.
One in.
Ever the optimist, I think we'll bring one in. I think I'll be an attacking player, and I think we'll bring one in, and I think we will possibly lose one. And I think it'll be
Okay, no worries. Shawnee, squad the same? Outs, ins? What do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be the same. I can't see anything happening.
Okay.
Maybe.
Literally 24 or 48 hours to go now, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Phillips. There's nothing, Gav. There's no murmurings of anything.
Okay, no worries. Grizz, same squad. Any ins, any outs for you?
Yeah, I reckon we'll have about two outgoings.
Okay.
And we'll have a forward coming in.
Okay. I think we'll do one. And I'm with Keith. I think Minamino might be the man to be sacrificed because Divo Origi just looks like he's having a great time doing fuck all. So I think that'll
reward. Telling you, it's the reward for the goal in the Champions League. It's like we kept hold of Sturridge, Moreno, Degsy, all these lads for a long time, Adam Lallana, and let contracts run down or when they wanted to leave and asked, look, I need to play first team football. Shaqiri wanted to go and play first team football. They move them on. They won't just sell. Like we all think, I guess, I know we want to finish up, but we all think as fans, Divock Origi, Shawnee said it earlier, does his head in. You know what you're going to get from him, which is very fucking little. The Klopp doesn't think like us. Klopp, I think, would leave him sitting there and let him go. Unless Divock Origi goes and once says, look, I'm going to go and play football because I'm a footballer and I'm not scratching my arse around here. There's four keepers on the bench this week and I'm not on it. What's going on? Unless he does that, I think he stays and sees out his contract. So I think, yeah, Minamino will one in.
It's one of those. Chris Brack says, frustrating weekend for the Reds. Men draw one all, the women lose 1-0. Chris has done a couple of shows on the women side of things in the last couple of days.
Play.
Go and check them out. We're trying our best to promote the women's team this season, and Chris is heading that up for us this season. So make sure you go and check them out, support them, follow them on social media and stuff like that. A lot of effort has gone into it, so go and do that. Sienna Steps, please don't forget that. Link in the description. You can go to, if you type Sienna Steps in, Sienna Steps, go for me into Google. You'll find it. If you want to donate there, we're doing our best for her as well. And if you want to buy a virtual ticket for Anfield, the link is in the description. Shawnee, anything else before we go?
No, all good, Gav.
You good?
All good.
Happy? All right, good stuff. Grizz, anything else before we go?
No, that's enough for one night.
Okay, good stuff. Yeah, that sounds fair. Keith, anything else before we go?
Quick one. My little sister had a baby this morning, and little fella had to go for a little operation straight away. So any little prayers out there, have a little prayer for the little fella. He's not serious, like, hopefully, but look. Yeah.
Okay.
In case they're watching, I'll give him a shout.
Does he have a name?
Senan.
Okay.
Yeah.
What a name.
Senan. Right. Yeah.
All the best to Senan. Anyway,
all the keep best going, to Senan.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely. Nice way to end that show. Rest of the week, Forum is on tomorrow. We have a transfer deadline day. We just drink cans and just pretend we're not. Well, we won't be signing anyone. So we just have a nice time on Tuesday. If you want to join us for a can and juice, you know, join us.
I think we're going yellow to toy in a yellow dress.
Yeah, about 9 o'clock. About 9 to 10:30. I think we're going to run for a little while on Tuesday night and have a bit of crack as well. Wednesday is the midweek fix with Jamie. Thursday is Carnage with Grizz. Friday is Sports Unplugged with Avi and nothing on Saturday. I mean, you'll be back Sunday. It's international week, isn't it?
Fucking
I can feel it. I can feel a quiz coming on. I can feel a quiz coming on. Lovely. Right, that's it. Oh, and people have asked about me and Andy having a random chat. If it's, how long is this international break?
Two weeks.
Three so games. Just, I saw some of them are playing again.
Okay,
yeah, but only one weekend. The next weekend we'll be back.
We might get me and Andy in for a random chat at some stage next week. Then we'll see how it goes. Right, that has been the Fatback Four. Thanks to Grizz, thanks to Shawnee, thanks to Keith, thanks to everyone in the chat. It's been very, very good. And some are FSG in, some are FSG out, some are like telling Klopp to do this, some are saying it's grand, and that's what it's all about. Loads of different opinions and loads of different angles and things, and it was really, really good. Talk to you in a bit. Over and out. Sports Social Podcast Network.